Reggie Bush, it's kind of in a league of his own as far as just electric with the ball in his hands. There's not many guys like that, and there have been a few that have drawn Reggie Bush comparisons, but anytime you compare someone to Reggie Bush, it's almost lofty. Hello and welcome in. It's Always College Football. The trophy is back on Reggie Bush's mantle. What does that mean? We're going to break it down from every angle. I say that a bit tongue-in-cheek. You'll understand why in a minute. It just feels more symbolic than it does anything else. Reggie Bush is and always will be a Heisman Trophy winner. Whether he had his trophy or not didn't make a difference to me, but I will explain why here in just a minute. Welcome to Always College Football. I'm Greg McElroy. Today is April 25th. We have a couple more spring games to get to here in a couple days. Actually, quite a few. Handful in the Big Ten. Handful in the Big 12, a couple in the Big 12 that I think have legitimate chance to get to the playoff. I think one in the Big 10 that we break down today has a really, really strong contingent of players and possibilities for growth as they try to punch their ticket to the playoff last year. I'll give you a hint. They almost made it last year. They almost made it. If not for losing in their conference championship game, they would have been in. So I will break down that team spring game. We have a lot that we need to look forward to. We'll talk about Oklahoma State. We'll talk about Oregon. We'll talk about all these other teams as well. A lot of teams that are taking the field, a lot of new faces, a lot of transfers, but a lot of interesting storylines as well. We're also going to break down the Reggie Bush situation. Everybody seems to have some massive opinion on this. We figured we'd weigh in as well. I've already kind of given you a bit of a sense as to how I feel, but to me, it's worth discussing, at least for a little bit. So we will discuss Reggie Bush getting his Heisman back, and we'll kick it off there with the former USC Trojan getting his statue back. We'll get things started with the biggest non-story in college football. Reggie Bush has had his Heisman returned because for all of us that have watched the sport for the last 20, 25 years, you know, we all conveniently acknowledge that the fact that Reggie Bush didn't win the Heisman. No, he didn't win it. Nope. Want to know why? Because he doesn't have one. It's almost like vacating wins. It's like, what a worthless slap on the wrist. Anybody that watched Reggie Bush throughout the 2005 season remembers the dominance and the electricity that was on the field every time he stepped on the field. So I've always tried to figure out, like, okay, fine, he broke the rules. Okay, in my eyes, he's still a Heisman Trophy winner. And I'm glad that the Heisman Trust did the right thing. It's fine. But I've also noticed, too, like in the court of public opinion, whether it was Johnny Manziel weighing in or others weighing in, like this fake outrage. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he doesn't have his trophy. But did anyone forget the visuals of Reggie Bush up there hoisting the trophy after we won it in 2005 over Vince Young and Matt Leinart and the others? Did anyone forget that? Like, did we erase that from our memory? We're not computers. We're human beings. We all know that that happened. So the fact that the trophy's returned doesn't really make that big a difference to me because I never disavowed him from the Heisman Trust. So I've noticed a lot of fake outrage. Like, I'm not going to the ceremony. Also, fine. That's fine. Reggie Bush is and always will be a Heisman Trophy winner, whether he had the trophy on his mantle or not. So I've just kind of not felt like this was a huge deal, not felt like it was as big of a deal as some people are making it out to be. And I'm glad he has his trophy back, but at the same time, they can't take away his memories of the speech he gave there in downtown New York at the Downtown Athletic Club after receiving his Heisman Trophy. So, Coobs, I know you want to weigh in on this as well, but I've just, for the life of me, never understood the idea of taking trophies, taking banners, taking away wins, because I saw them happen. Whether you want to acknowledge them in the record book is beside the point, because my memory recalls their dominance.
I couldn't agree with you more on the wins and the all the other stuff, but aren't you happy for Reggie? I mean, he's been politicking for this for a while. It meant something to him not to have the trophy. So tell me that you're at least very happy for Reggie that he got the trophy back, and for USC to an extent.
I'm happy for USC, but do they really need a seventh Heisman Trophy in there or eighth Heisman Trophy to help them recruit? Like, does it make a difference? Does, for the University of Southern California, does Reggie Bush's trophy being in their foyer when you walk into the athletic department and the football building? Does that matter? Because if you're going to SC, you're probably going for NIL. You're probably going for the opportunity to play for Lincoln Riley and the offense, whatever. Like, that team has 8 Heisman Trophy winners. That team has 7. I'm going to the team with 8. Does that matter? And am I happy for Reggie? Honestly, like, God's honest truth? Sure, I guess. But I also acknowledge that he broke the rules. Like, he did something that was impermissible. Whether it's fair or foul, it's fine. Like, he broke the rules. Us as college football players in that era, we understood the rules. You cannot accept impermissible benefits. And if you do, you run the risk of potentially being ruled ineligible. Those are the rules that we all had to live by. And Reggie didn't. So am I happy for him that he got his trophy back? I guess. Like, I frankly don't really care. And I also, at the same time, while I think it's important that while the world has changed beneath our feet, it doesn't change the fact that rules were broken at the time. That's not me banging on SC. It's not me banging on Reggie. It's not me banging on anybody that's ever been on probation or had wins vacated or whatever. Like, it happened. It happened. It is what it is. But the reality is we all had to live by the same set of rules. I played 5 years after Reggie retired, or after Reggie got drafted by the New Orleans Saints, and I didn't take impermissible benefits. So I don't know. I guess part of me is happy for him because he's been fighting it for a while. But to me, it never really changed anything. Like, the fact that you took his trophy is symbolic. I mean, I remember and will always refer to Reggie Bush as a Heisman Trophy winner, whether he had possession of his trophy or not.
That's fair. That's fair. And for me, I was on College Game Day in 05. So I watched him up close. And before you say everybody's going to reference the Fresno State game, I was there for Arizona State where he ran wild. I was there against Notre Dame, where he won the game. Forget Matt Leiner. It was Reggie Bush who won that game. And I was there against UCLA. And he is the most dynamic running back football player I have seen in college football. And I want to know where he ranks for you as far as Heisman winners that you can remember.
I don't think there's been a player in my lifetime that was as electric as Reggie Bush. Now, that is in a very impressionable period of my lifetime. So we've talked about this on the show before. The ages between, I think, 12 and 16 are probably your most impressionable ages as far as watching players, remembering them fondly. Like, 12 to 16. And for me, I was born in 88. 12 to 16 is 2000 through 2004 or 5. And I'm not going to lie, he was probably as dynamic as it gets. Now, since I've been covering the sport, the players that I think are potentially more dominant would be like a Lamar Jackson, a Cam Newton. But Reggie Bush, it's kind of in a league of his own as far as just electric with the ball in his hands. There's not many guys like that. And there have been a few that have drawn Reggie Bush comparisons. But anytime you compare someone to Reggie Bush, it's almost lofty. It's almost like when you compare singers to Whitney Houston. Like, yeah, okay, probably not going to happen. You're not passing Whitney Houston. Not happening. Like, yeah, Adele's great, but she's not as good as Whitney Houston. And that's kind of the way things are with Reggie Bush as well. Granted, for this era, I know we have a lot of listeners that refer back to Bo Jackson and Herschel Walker and all the guys that played in the 80s and the 90s and really the heyday of the running back position. Plenty of elite players from that era as well. But in the modern era, since 2000, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more electric player than Reggie Bush. Matt Rhule's second spring game at Nebraska. And if you listen to some of the buzz coming out of what's gone on in Lincoln the last couple weeks, it sounds like the offense is starting to kind of hit its stride. And if you listen to Marcus Satterfield, the offensive coordinator, and the offensive staff, what held Nebraska back last year? And we can all kind of look at the details of what really held them back. But if you're going to boil it down, okay, boil it down to one specific thing, it was turnovers. I mean, the turnovers, absolutely atrocious. And last season, they turned the ball over 31 times. Think about that. There were times last year when watching Nebraska where it was almost difficult to corral shotgun snaps. I mean, it's the truth. But if you listen to kind of where things are right now and the progress that's being made, and we could talk about the quarterback competition in a moment, but I'm really optimistic that the offense has started to take some strides. Now, Matt Rhule actually said last Saturday was the best day that the Nebraska offense has had in a scrimmage since he's been there. He said 8, maybe 9, maybe 10 touchdowns, maybe more, including a 99-yard touchdown drive. So he went on to say, and this I'm going to take the head coach's word for it, this offense is, quote, light years ahead in the passing game to where they were last fall. That to me is really encouraging. And he also has pointed out multiple times this spring to how Charlie Brewer, who started for him 1 year at Baylor and rotated with another quarterback and then made himself the starter en route to the Big 12 championship game and ultimately the Sugar Bowl. So he talked about that progress for Charlie Brewer when Matt Rhule was at Baylor, and it feels like he has something going on right now. Now, we all know that the quarterback competition is Dylan Raiola. Be anxious to see exactly how he looks. First opportunity to really kind of eyeball him here in the spring game this weekend. Daniel Kalen, who's also a true freshman. And then junior Henrik Harburg, who by all accounts has had a pretty dang good scrimmage and is not making it easy to just give way to the hotshot recruit that is Dylan Raiola. So it'll be interesting to see how that all works out. And I'm also interested to see just how much this offense is clicking. I know they've emphasized taking care of the football, but I also want to see them be aggressive because they're probably going to have to score, especially if their defense isn't quite where they need to be. And based on the performance last Saturday, maybe they're not there just yet. But I think all Nebraska fans would welcome the sight of an excellent and efficient offensive performance in their spring games. I'll be watching that group very closely. Let's go to Maryland. Now, the Maryland football team under Mike Locksley has improved drastically. Okay, they were 3-9 in his first year, have gone 8-5 in each of the past two seasons. They've won bowl games in three straight seasons for the first time ever. And the biggest thing I'm looking at for Maryland is the quarterback competition. Okay, they're rotating quarterbacks right now between Billy Edwards and MJ Morris. MJ Morris, the transfer from NC State. And by all accounts, Billy Edwards has mostly been running with the first team. MJ Morris has mostly been running with the second team. They do return a few starters on that side of the ball too. So whoever steps into that quarterback role, whether it's Edwards or Morris, they're going to be surrounded by some capable weapons. Now you look at the running back spot and Roman Hemby, you know, they're going to be in really good shape. You look at the wide receivers and Ty Felton and Caden Prather. I think they're going to be in good shape. Preston Howard also returns at tight end. So I'm very optimistic about what we're going to see from the quarterbacks, but I'll be watching those guys specifically. How do they distribute? How comfortable do they look in this very quarterback-centric offense? Because they are replacing Talia Tungabailoa, who statistically speaking, one of the best in Maryland history and one of the best in Big Ten history. So I'll be really interested in watching that competition play out. Maybe we can get an indicator on who has the lead heading into the summer based on the rep distribution in Maryland spring game. They also have a few other guys that they've added in the portal, like Alu Ba, Ryan Capriotti from East Carolina, Alan Heron from Shorter, Jalen Husky from Bowling Green. So I'll be keeping an eye on some of those transfer players as well. Let's go next to Rutgers. And I feel like I'm repeating myself a lot here, but I have to play the hits, man. Like, we're interested in quarterback competitions. Quarterback competitions are profitable this time of the year, and we'll talk about it with Rutgers as well. It's really down to two guys, Gavin Wimsett. Now, Wimsett was kind of an issue last year with inconsistencies throwing the football. There were a lot of volume passes where there were no receivers open, though, too. So I'm not going to be looking exclusively at the quarterback spot. I also want to see the improvements at wide receiver. And I am cautiously optimistic that that group has grown tremendously. They also have Ethan Kaliakmanis, who transferred from Minnesota. So he's got familiarity with the Big Ten. And I look at Ethan Kaliakmanis' situation at Minnesota. It was difficult for him to kind of find much of a rhythm. I thought the passing game was stagnant several times. When he was a starter dating back even to 2 years ago, he got thrust into the starting lineup against Penn State in his first career start. Then he had to play most of the time last year. They've always been run-centric, but the receivers never got a ton of separation. And I don't think that Ethan Kaliakmanis was always put in the best situation to succeed with the skill set that he has. But I remember talking to the Minnesota staff prior to the season when he took over and like, man, he's got game. He's got arm talent. Now it's about bringing out the best in him. And never really materialized, but he gets a fresh start at Rutgers where he will be going head-to-head with the incumbent Wimsett. But Wimsatt, like I said, has been up and down as far as his accuracy is concerned. You cannot play quarterback by yourself. And Greg Schiano has talked a lot this offseason about the fact they've really added three guys. Now, two by way of the transfer portal, but they also get back Chris Long from injury, which is significant. Damir Miller was a transfer from Monmouth. Nassim Brantley is a transfer from Western Illinois. Those guys all now being out there have really elevated this receiver core to the point in which I think they could be a middle tier group in the Big Ten, all things considered. You couple that with what we've seen from Fama Torre, who's there hasn't been a lot of clips out from the spring from Rutgers, but I did see a pretty nice touchdown on the corner of the end zone by Torre, so we'll be seeing how he does. But whether it's Torre, Ian Strong, Ben Black, Miller, Long, Brantley, this is a group that has grown quite a bit and have some young players too that might just break out here with improved quarterback play. So I'll be watching the offense and in particular the passing game for Rutgers when they take to the field here in their spring game. Moving on to a team that I think is in the driver's seat for a playoff spot. That would be the Oregon Ducks. This will be the first time in the Dan Lanning era that there is someone not named Bo Nix taking the snaps as QB1 for the Ducks. That will be Dylan Gabriel. And we know that Dylan Gabriel has played a ton of football, dating back to his time at UCF, the 2 years that he spent at Oklahoma. He's really, really solid. Really solid. Solid athlete, very accurate, gets the ball out quickly. Not a crazy big arm, but knows how to get the ball out, knows how to negotiate defenders. Not the biggest guy in the world, but he's crafty and he has a lot of game. I'm as interested in watching his comfort level in Will Stein's offense as I am to watch the progression of Dante Moore, who will likely be the heir apparent in the future, but it will be a hotly contested quarterback battle next year to see who will ultimately replace the super senior in Gabriel. So I'll be watching those two new additions for the Ducks very closely, but there's a few other new additions that I'm very interested in. Evan Stewart in particular was a blue chip prospect when he signed at A&M, had, I think, some really bright moments at A&M, but there were also a few inconsistencies with his quarterback. His quarterbacks seemed like they got hurt, and as soon as he started to get into a bit of a rhythm, the guy that was thrown to him wouldn't necessarily be there. I think Evan Stewart's a game breaker, though, and has a chance to be wide receiver one for Oregon and what should be a very deep weaponry for the Ducks. They got really good pieces across the board. They also have really good pieces at running back, but I'm very interested in the new addition of Jay Harris. Now, he's kind of a bowling ball. Northwest Missouri State. He's a running back transfer. I'm curious to see how he runs. Now, this is a big step up in competition, but if you listen to some of the whispers and those that have boots on the ground in Eugene, a lot of people very impressed by the power that they've seen from Jay Harris. Not the biggest guy in the world, but stout and runs big. So to be really interested in seeing his progress as well. The defensive line, there are about 10 guys, it feels like, with Oregon that are second-year players that are only going to get developed and continue to grow. And that group collectively across the board could be one of the better groups in the Big Ten next year, especially if some of those second-year players blossom the way I anticipate them blossoming. And then in the back end, a few new faces, particularly at corner. You get Jabbar Muhammad, the transfer from Washington. That was a huge pickup. He's a crafty player, did a great job locking down one side of the field for the Huskies last year. And now you get to couple him with Sione Lalea, who's at 6'4". 6'4", number one JUCO corner in last year's cycle. And you think too about what Oregon did last year with length at corner. Kyrie Jackson's got great length, not quite 6'4", but he's got great length. So to have one really long corner or one corner that's really stout in man coverage might allow them to kind of roll coverage over the long corner and create much smaller windows for opposing quarterbacks. So I'll be real interested in watching the defensive line and some of those second-year players and the back end, and in particular the corners, the length of Lalea and the agility and cover skills of Jabbar Muhammad. So be watching that group very, very closely to go along with some of the new additions that they have offensively. UCLA will also be taking the field. And I'm going to be honest with you. We always put a positive spin on our evaluation. And I will give you that positive spin in a moment. But when you look at UCLA's roster, there are some concerns. Now, just across the board, this is not a team that is loaded with talent. This is not a team that is loaded with depth. Now, they have some pros, but one's along the defensive line. It was massive to get him back out of the portal. You have a couple, I think, at wide receiver. But if you look at last year's team, they had a few neutralizers on the edges of the defense. Leiatu Latu, Gabe Murphy, Grayson Murphy, and Carl Jones. Those guys were legit. So the drop-off on the edges of the defense is something that I'll be curious in, because those guys last year could take over the game. Can this group even come close to doing that? Because if they can't, there could be a considerable step back on the defensive side of the football. Last year's group, all they had to do was just rush four, and they can get home with creating pressure against the opposing quarterback. This year, they might have to get creative. And you know, in a spring game setting, they're not going to be showing their intricate blitz schemes. That's not happening. I know that. So I'm going to get vanilla defensive sets. I know I'm going to get vanilla, but I'm going to find out in those vanilla packages if they have a defender that can create his own shot. Is if they don't on the edges, that's going to be something that I would think could hinder their progress as they transition into the Big Ten. The one sliver of massive optimism is at wide receiver. I think they have a lot of talent at wide receiver. J. Michael Sturdivant had sat out a little bit of time, but knowing that he's out there, there is a lot of guys. All right, Rico Flores has been a great addition from Notre Dame. Very steady, extremely smooth, has been really solid in creating consistent separation, and has actually shown very reliable hands, which was a little bit of an inconsistency that he dealt with at Notre Dame. Sturdivant, like when we talked about, when he's gone and when he's been able to practice, he's been really good. He also, it appears, has gotten a little bit bigger as well. And that's only going to help him in contested catch situations. They've also had a few other guys that have been out as well. Pagan has dealt with some hamstring issues, but hopefully will be in a pretty good spot. He's got top-end speed that's really, really solid. And then Xavier Staples is another name that you continue to hear about too. You even think about some of the freshmen. Kwazi Gilmer, by all accounts, has looked good as well. So I'll be watching those wide receivers. I'll be watching the edges of the defense for UCLA. Can they be anywhere near what they were a year ago at that position? Moving into the Big 12, a few teams that will be taking the field as well. West Virginia will be on the field. And I found it interesting as I was trying to study and prepare for this show today, I can't seem to figure out what the format's going to be for West Virginia's spring game. That's not a problem. It's not a problem at all. But it does sound like there's going to be some 11-on-11 competition, traditional scrimmage setting. Sounds like there might even be four quarters, might even have time. Who knows? But Neil Brown was rather coy when it came to kind of making expectations about what the format would look like. They're also not going to be at 100%. There's several starters from last year offensively that will not suit up for the spring game. Cole Taylor being one of them at tight end. Offensive lineman Tomas Remack will not be out there as well. But the offensive line in time, this is going to be a position of strength. It was last year too. If you look at the projected starting lineup for this fall, they have four seniors and a fourth-year junior. I think they're in pretty good shape at that position. And we all know what this offense is going to be. They're going to be a group that relies heavily on the run game, meaning Jaheim White. By all accounts, he's going in the spring game. I'll be watching his development. We know Garrett Green is very capable in the running game. How much can he continue to progress as a passer? And then defensive lineman Sean Martin, sounds like he's going to be going as well. There's also a couple of off-season additions that I'll be anxious to watch. And Jaden Bray, the wide receiver, big body, physical receiver that can go up and make those big plays downfield in 50-50 ball situations. And I'll be watching the outside linebacker Ty French, who by all accounts has done a pretty dang good job. One other thing to keep an eye on for West Virginia, Rodney Gallagher, he's in his second spring now with the Mountaineers. And we already saw a little bit of what he could do last year at wide receiver. He's a good playmaker and the guy's got game. But right now they are currently working him not just at wide receiver, but he's also playing some nickel. And by all accounts, it sounds like his cover ability there in the nickel in the slot, lateral quickness, change of direction, sounds like he's a really capable player of playing man-to-man. So We've talked about this for a while at times. We've started to see it become, you know, a fun part of college football. Two-way players seem to be returning to the sport. And for West Virginia, it sounds like they might have one in Rodney Gallagher. I hope he plays all the time at wide receiver and all the time at nickel, because I love guys that can go both ways. It's an indicator of just being a tremendous football player. So we'll see how Gallagher handles that role here in their spring game on Saturday. Let's go to TCU. And TCU, I remember I honestly looked back at my notes from last year's spring game breakdown. All I cared about with TCU, look, Sonny Dykes and company, they have made it very well known that they're attacking the portal. They're attacking the portal. They're attacking the portal. They're attacking the portal. They did it last year. They've done it again this year. There are 20 new players on this roster just from the portal. And there's a few that I'm really intrigued by. Now, do I think that Ken Seals is going to be the starting quarterback? I don't know if I'd go that far. But I will be really curious to see some of the guys that do arrive here and how much they ultimately play. Bless Harris in particular, offensive tackle from Florida State. I'll see how he's handling. Nana Osafa-Mensah from Notre Dame. I thought he at times really stood out along what was a deep Notre Dame defensive line. Maybe he'll be able to find his way into the lineup. A bunch of other guys. Jax Porter's a tight end from Alabama. Cam Smith, the safety's from Memphis. Devion Deal is an edge rusher from Tulane. There's a bunch of guys. Jatavis Broughton from he's a corner from Utah. I think he's got a chance to start right away. This might be a totally different looking team than they were at any point last year. So I'm just curious, how do all these new transfers kind of round out the top 22? 11 on offense, 11 on defense, and how many of those guys are first-year players? This is something that TCU is going to continue to rely on. They've done so with some success. Last year was a disappointment, naturally, but maybe they can bounce back. I don't think this team is as far away as it felt like they were at times last year. So I'll be looking at the new faces for the Horned Frogs this weekend. Colorado. Now, this should not come as a huge surprise. It's going to be hard not to come away enamored with some of the weapons and some of the talent that they have at quarterback and wide receiver and corner, but we know about those guys. Those are known commodities. I don't need to tune in to Colorado's spring game to see whether or not Shedeur Sanders is going to be really effective. We know he is. That's already understood. What I want to watch is the interior of the offensive line. And while that's not sexy, think about what was the biggest Achilles heel for Colorado last year. And now they had a few of them, but one in particular was the interior of the offensive line. They desperately need to have improved offensive line play. And it's going to be really interesting here over the next few weeks, months. Will they continue to add pieces in the portal? They've already added some. Houston transfer Tyler Johnson, UTEP transfer Justin Mayers. They also have a couple guys that are going to potentially be back out there, like Tyler Brown, who is a Jackson State transfer whose waiver was denied last year, but certainly would have helped if he was eligible to play. He was one of the best offensive linemen that Deion had at Jackson State a couple years back. So I'll be watching the offensive line, because there's nowhere for this group to go. Could they get to bowl eligibility? Sure. Could they get to 7-8 wins? Absolutely. But can they get to the playoff? Not without an improved offensive and defensive line. They've already added Deion Hayes. He won't be competing in the spring game, but the transfer from Pitt was a nice addition along the defensive line for Prime and company. I'll also be watching the new coordinators. Now, coordinator changes are not new for Deion Sanders. He's had new coordinators, feels like almost every year. I mean, they've happened pretty much every offseason of his coaching career, even dating back to his time at Jackson State. But the two new coordinators this year, I think it's going to be really interesting. Now, Pat Shurmur isn't technically new. Now, he joined the team as an analyst last year, but ultimately, as the season went along, took over play calling duties. Now, I think he's a really good quarterback coach. His son played college quarterback. He's going to do a great job, I think, with Shedeur Sanders and continue to progress. They got to find some balance offensively at some point. We know they haven't been able to run the football. They got to be able to a little bit more committed to the run game this upcoming season. Last year, their top two running backs, they combined for 640 yards. It's just not good enough. Now, you take into account sacks and all those things, their rushing yardage was really disappointing across the board. But hopefully they can find a little more success on the ground. But it won't be easy, because the Big 12 in general, I think, has pretty decent defensive line play across the board. I'm also curious to see Robert Livingston. He's the defensive coordinator, but he's a former Cincinnati Bengals safety coach and is highly regarded in NFL circles and worked the last few seasons with the Bengals coordinator to get them to the Super Bowl. And if you look at kind of the secondary play, the safeties play in particular for the Bengals, they were pretty sporty the last couple of years. So I'll be watching those guys. How do their schemes line up? And are they using as much tempo as they used a year ago? All those things are something that I'll be really keeping a close eye on when evaluating the Buffs here in the spring game. Arizona, had the playoff, the 12-team playoff, been intact, they would have made the playoff a year ago. And we know that Arizona has a ton of talent back, okay? Offensively and defensively, they have 10 guys on each side of the ball that all started, that all return. Very few teams return as much talent and contributors as Arizona. That was prior to Jed Fish leaving for Washington. He did take a couple guys with him, but for the most part, some of the biggest difference makers, some of the biggest impact players, Noah Fifita, Tetra Noah McMillan, they're still back. Now, it's going to be a little bit of a different system, but I can't imagine either of those two taking a step back drastically as far as productivity is concerned. I think they're going to be excellent. Now, Tetra Noah McMillan injured his foot in Saturday's practice, and Brett Brennan doesn't give injury updates. But as of Tuesday, McMillan was in a boot and was moving around in practice on a scooter. So I think it's pretty safe to say that we won't see him when they take the field in the spring. I also will be watching a lot of the competitions at running back, at wide receiver, and at tight end along the offensive line. And the defense, a couple holes there in the front seven that needed to be filled. But you think about where Arizona was in 2023. They were 50th in total defense, but they were 125th nationally the previous year. So I get the sense that they're only kind of on the ascent. And Dwayne Aquina, who's been around for a while, he takes over as the defensive coordinator. He's a 67-year-old player. It's the sixth defensive play caller for Arizona since 2019. He was the defensive backs coach last year, but now he steps into the defensive coordinator spot. He's been around Arizona for a while. He's coached for Dick Tomey. He's coached for John Makovic, Mike Stoops, and Jed Fish, and now Brent Brennan. So he's a lifer there at Arizona. I'll be curious to see what he does on the defensive side of the football. And finally, last but certainly not least, you can make a case they might have the best team returning in the Big 12. It's the Oklahoma State Cowboys. They're looking to take another step. 10-win season last year, trip to the Big 12 championship, superstar and Doak Walker Award winner Ollie Gordon. You get the sense that Oklahoma State might be poised for a college football playoff appearance. And for the first time since 2021, Oklahoma State will enter the season with the same coordinators that it had the year before. Casey Dunn will hold down the offense, and Brian Nardo will hold down the defense. Now, offensively, they bring a lot of pieces back, 10 starters back offensively. But can this unit take a step given where they were last year? Now, they were really solid. They actually averaged almost 6 yards per snap last year. Really efficient group, but most of the time it was predicated on the run game. Can the offense behind Alan Bowman take a considerable step? Can the passing game step up and hit some of those plays downfield that oftentimes last year were there, but not there with the same regularity as the consistency that they found by handing it to Ollie Gordon 25, 30 times a game? Very optimistic with the growth that this group might have collectively on that side of the ball. And then defensively, if you think about the shift, the massive shift from 4-2-5 2 years ago to 3-3-3 with two corners on the perimeter, three safeties back, that's a gigantic adjustment, a gigantic adjustment. So this is year two now in Brian Nardo's defense, which is different. They do have to replace Xavier Benson because he is excellent, but they were not super efficient in the pass defense. Can they get better in the back end? They have great linebacker play. I think they have solid pieces up front. But linebacker play is a chance to, I think, to be elite and the secondary needs to take a step. And if they can, the Cowboys might be in prime position to take the next step as a program, that next step being a trip to the college football playoff. Also be watching the wide receiver room is a deep and versatile unit. Very intrigued by Dijon Stribling, transfer that got banged up early in the season last year, but they had high hopes for him coming down from Washington State the year before. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to look like. I'm interested in watching the tight end Tyler Foster. And of course, I know Ollie Gordon's the guy. I'm not taking anything away from him. I don't want to take carries away from Ollie Gordon, but it is nice to know that you have a secondary back now in AJ Green that's transferred from Arkansas that is going to hopefully take some of the pressure off of Ollie Gordon and give him some rest. So if he looks good in the spring game, looks good in the fall, that's going to only help this offense be a little bit better and not rely so heavily on one guy's contributions. That'll do it for us here at Always College Football. Continue to encourage all of you to like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show. We appreciate y'all very much. Whether you're on the podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, leave us a rating, subscribe to the podcast, download it from anywhere. If you're on Spotify, leave us a rating, subscribe to it there. Wherever you get your podcasts, like, rate, and subscribe as best you can. If you're here with us via the ESPN YouTube channel, hit that thumbs up button right below. Leave us a comment. We read the comments and we will address some of your questions in the comments at some point here in a future show. So for all of us here at Always College Football, continue to support the show. We got lots of fun stuff coming up. We'll put a bow on the portal on the Monday edition. The portal closes here 5 days from now or so. So we'll put a bow on that and kind of address what teams have hit the needs that they needed to hit here in this portion of the calendar. So for all of us here at Always College Football, for Mark, Jake, Jack, the other Jack, I'm Greg. We hope you have an amazing day. And remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.